You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
The five-second rule doesn't always apply.
Well, I don't know. It should. This was less than 5 seconds.
Did you eat it?
No. So here's what happened in the commercial break. I got out my little bag of apples, and I took a bite out of one of the apples, and the other half of the apple fell down to the floor. And it fell on the part of the floor.
That's carpeted, guys.
That's carpeted. So there was like a little, you know, piece of hair on it and
that's
something
disgusting.
Else.
Disgusting.
But it's less than 5 seconds.
But it's the carpeted part of the floor.
And the fact it's an apple.
Yes.
So it's soaking up the food or the floor, the carpet. It's got all that. It traps that
don't
in there.
Don't eat it.
Yeah, but.
Do not eat it.
Okay, but what about the starving children?
No, don't be weird.
What, are you going to mail that to them?
If you were at your own place, your own apartment, and you have a hardwood floor that's clean, and you drop a Cheez-It or a cracker, fine, five-second rule. You are at work where a lot of people come in and out, and you dropped an apple on the carpeted part of the floor. Don't eat it.
He dropped it right where he's sitting?
I do
see
some more.
And there's a carpeted part.
I do see some more
hairs. You dropped it where Cody Stutes and Joel Blank are walking in and out all the time?
Well,
no offense to them. It's just different people. You
it's
got
not
Lance.
Your own residence, right?
But think about it from this perspective. I'd be building up my immune system.
That's weird. What, are you going to have a chicken pox party? Don't eat the apple.
A chicken pox party. That sounds like a raging time. Get some oatmeal bath out. Oh, yeah. All right, fine. I won't eat it unless enough people convince me to eat it. Twitch.tv/ESPN975.
I need you guys.
See, look, I'm trying to promote the Twitch, Vanessa. That's what I'm doing. Raise. Anybody? Possibly Paul? Yes. I will eat food that was on the floor for the Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975.
I'm asking our listeners and viewers right now because I'm just so, no offense.
Shame.
Yeah,
oh, you're
exactly.
Going to shame me for that?
Thank you.
You're going to shame me? It's an apple. It's
the grossest food you could drop on the floor.
It's not,
and still
and
eat.
It's not just on the floor. It's on the carpeted part of a place of which you work.
I don't see any more
hairs. Because
it would
be different if it had like some sort of hard shell or where it doesn't soak it up.
If you're at your own residence and it's a hard, there's just a lot of factors that make it disgusting.
Okay, I will put
Thank
down
you.
The apple.
Thank you.
Just for you guys, because you guys are soft.
No,
and
throw it
like
away. Why are you just putting it down?
Yeah,
throw it away.
Exactly.
There's a trash can right there. I feel like you're going to eat it when we're not looking.
Fine, guys. See, I'm getting the trash can. And I'm putting it in the trash can and wasting food. Sorry, Mom. I'm sorry. I wasted food because Vanessa and Sean peer pressured me.
Yeah, well.
It's an outrage.
When you don't have a weird disease tomorrow. And you know what?
I don't know. I'm thinking about little,
you know what, Sean?
Little Randy
it's
in Somalia.
It's also about self-respect.
Mm-mm. There's a small child just died because of that.
Again, they were going to have that apple anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. All right, so the Astros, I don't have a good transition here.
Speaking of eating, how about Jeremy Pena this weekend?
Well, if we were Katie Nolan, we'd say, speaking of trash cans.
you don't like Katie Nolan.
I just don't like the way that Apple has set her up for failure and how she's...
Oh, okay. It's about Apple now.
And how women have worked hard to be analysts and then her
Fair
analyst
enough.
Role is, I don't know, is it good if you get a hit in baseball?
It actually does sound like her.
The Astros not getting swept by the Blue Jays thanks to Jeremy Pena mania. Tied at the 6th in the 10th inning, Pena showing out, getting that rookie walk-off home run. This was a fun day. Here's the audio.
Pena, straightaway center field, hit well, all the way back. That ball's gone! Walk it off! Jeremy Pena! Astros win this game on a two-run walk-off home run! By the young shortstop, and the celebration is on.
Todd Callis, of course, on the call. 24-year-old rookie Jeremy Pena, a big moment for him.
I have a request from Todd, who I believe also went to Syracuse University. Todd?
Oh, God.
We are a part of the mafia. Can at least once on a Jeremy Pena home run, can you please say, Jeremy Pena went yard today?
I don't get it.
It's from Jeremy, the Pearl Jam song.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Jeremy Pena with a web jam. What a play. You know?
Yeah, we're going to have Eddie Vedder call in and do a...
I don't get it. Why? I mean, that would be a fantastic call. Would.
That's a good song. Great album, by the way. One of the best albums.
I sang it once for karaoke, and I was like, Jesus, this song's really depressing.
Yeah,
Why did I pick this?
It's about a guy named Jeremy that committed suicide.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Class.
I just like the tune.
Yeah, maybe Todd Kelly shouldn't yell it when he hits a home run.
Right. So the Astros, look, it's been rough waters lately, especially offensively. They've struggled to get a hit. Jose Altuve, of course, on the 10-day IL. Kyle Tucker, should he wear the gloves? Should he not wear the gloves?
He should wear the gloves. That worked. He got three hits when he put the gloves on.
This was a nice bright spot. If you would have told me a month ago that Jeremy Pena was going to be the one preventing the Astros from going on a losing streak heading into Arlington, I would have said you're crazy, but such is life and such is baseball.
Man, that would have been nuts to be on a 5-game losing streak heading into a series against Texas, who you're still wondering, are they going to be annoying this year? But look, the Blue Jays, you know, are going to be a problem. George Springer's first at-bat with the Blue Jays at Minute Maid Park is a bomb that he sends to orbit. You saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bichette and all the other young players that the Blue Jays have. Like, that's going to be a difficult team to beat. You have to outscore them. And the pitching actually did its job for the most part this weekend. They just really could not get anything going, and they needed some help. Like, they needed luck. It was a walk that was in with the bases loaded. It was yesterday. It was a bad throw on a little infield dribbler by Jeremy Pena that also led to more runs. They needed someone to step up, and I got to give Pena a lot of credit because he's just got some giant balls. You know, I there's no other way to say it.
Yeah,
He is obviously someone who is young and still excited, and you saw how pumped up he was rounding the bases. But then afterwards, he does that interview with Julia Morales.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's just so calm and collected. It was almost like he was bored. And I was like, damn, this is the kind of demeanor I guess I want out of a young player. Someone who never gets too high, never gets too low. And Alex Bregman basically said as much after the game. He said, and I quote here, Bregman, he's very confident and he knows his ability. He's very level-headed. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He stays focused. That is perfect for a young major leaguer. And look, I don't think it's going to continue this way, but I feel right now like I'm over Carlos Correa because Pena has stepped up in big moments, has shown that he's got a great glove. He has fun with the glove, too. He does this little Shooter McGavin pistol in the air deal whenever he guns somebody out. And
I love the confidence.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think that's what you want. And think about this. This guy's been getting compared to Carlos Correa. So he's really had to learn to drown out the noise. And I think you can see that. There was a big day with Miguel Cabrera making his 3,000th hit. I don't know why I just struggled. It's Monday and words are hard.
Ah, that's fine.
But who is going to be the next Astro to hit a milestone? We had this. You and I were talking about this in the break, and I think it's an interesting discussion. Cabrera's milestone will not be matched for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about these big milestones in general, which Astros player could you see having one?
So I looked at Jose Altuve's hit totals because I thought, okay, he's got to be closest to maybe getting 3,000 hits. But 12 years into his career, even though he has led the American League in hits four times, he is only at 1,783. I was surprised by that. If he plays another 6 to 8 years, okay, maybe he could get to 3,000. Do we think Altuve is going to play another 6 to 8 years? I hope that he does. I hope that he has a career as long as Craig Biggio. But, you know, towards the end of Craig Biggio's career, I think a lot of people were like, yeah, he's here because he's trying to get to that milestone.
Right.
We'll see. I don't know. I think that the guy, if you're going to do a futures bet right now, it's Yordan Alvarez, and it's for 500 home runs, because 64 home runs at 24 years old in less than 2.5 years. It's a long way off from 500, obviously, but that's a pretty damn good start.
But assuming that he stays healthy and continues to have the years that he's had, very, very much could happen.
Right. After that, though, I it's hard to find somebody else. Justin Verlander already has his 3,000th strikeout, and no one's winning 300 wins again.
No.
And he's, I mean, Verlander's at 227 at age 39. And unless Verlander goes on a Tom Brady-esque, I'm going to pitch until I'm 45, 46, which is looking doubtful after having Tommy John surgery, even then, like that's going to be tough to get to.
Cabrera also RIP. I mean, he's in Detroit.
Yeah.
It's just a bummer.
I'll give him this. At the very least, he will be remembered by that fan base in a way that very few, I think, other athletes, especially these days, get to be remembered. I mean, playing your entire career for one place.
It doesn't happen, and it makes you immediately known as the loyal Detroit, we love you for life guy.
Right. I mean, because Matt Stafford, who Lions fans were rooting for with the Rams, I make fun of it. You know, Boston did the same thing where I grew up with Ray Bourque when he got traded to the Colorado Avalanche in 1997, 96, I believe. I mean, it happens. Maybe it was 2000. I forget the year that it happened. But I remember it was embarrassing to see that Boston was celebrating somebody else's title. But yeah, that's what Detroit had. Like, woohoo, Matt Stafford won a Super Bowl. He forced his way out of town, low-key.
And Matt Stafford, by the way, was in Detroit for Cabrera's 3,000th.
Well, that's
hit.
Cool. You know
it
what?
Was
that,
cool.
Good job by Matt Stafford still
that's
keeping,
why Detroit loves
keeping
him.
True.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, which NFL team has the most pressure coming into this unpredictable NFL draft? I don't think it's the Texans. That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, dreams will come true in Las Vegas and beyond as the NFL draft happens. It's going to be a fun one. The Texans actually having high draft picks for the first time in a few years, and we'll see what Nick Caserio can do.
Five early picks.
It's awesome.
Oh,
11
yes.
total, right?
Yeah.
11 total.
I mean, and hopefully with this massive haul that they have to work with early on, we're going to see immediate returns. And you got to say, no matter how you might feel about Nick Caserio to this point, you have to admit that draft class number one has been pretty good thus far.
I agree.
Now, drafts are so, I think, up and down, unpredictable. Team to team, I don't think there's really any one specific team that's awesome at drafting. You point to a couple of draft classes and you'll say, well, that's why this team is good now. But it's a good start for Nick Caserio, and I am not necessarily confident going into his second draft, but I am cautiously optimistic about what he's going to be doing over the next couple of days.
We've talked a lot about this draft. Nick Caserio used the word crapshoot. Guys like Mel Kiper, Peter Schrager, Daniel Jeremiah, Lance Zierlein, everybody that mocks drafts and does this on an annual basis says this is one of the most predictable, if not the most, one of the most unpredictable, if not the most unpredictable that they've seen. There are some people that have Malik Willis going at number two and some people that have him going at 32. It is that crazy. So which team has the most pressure or should feel the most pressure in this NFL draft? I will say I don't think it's the Texans. I think they're one of the teams that, you know,
who?
They desperately need a good draft.
Who do you think it is then?
I think it's a market that we just talked about a couple of segments ago. In fact, the number one media market, it's up to you, New York, New York. I think that the Jets, and you could make this, you know, maybe an argument for the Giants too, because they have number five and number seven overall. But I think the Jets, they're going to have had four first round picks in 2 years. I know people don't expect them to be good, so it's not the pressure of, okay, you're going to go in a Super Bowl, whatever. But if you can't develop any of these young players, especially after all the hype that Robert Saleh received, I think you're in a bad spot. The other team, I think, could be Carolina because they're in the situation that they're at quarterback. Their owner has the most money and has made all of these promises, has openly criticized himself for the amount of money he paid Matt Rhule. So I'm saying the Jets and Carolina.
I'll start with Carolina. Carolina doesn't have to be in that spot. If they draft with the idea that we're going to try to give Matt Rhule something that will help him keep his job, then yeah, that's a lot of pressure because that means that they have to nail that pick and likely they would need to go quarterback in that spot. But the Jets is an interesting one that you brought up. And, you know, given the way that Jets fans were essentially throwing themselves a parade for getting multiple first-round picks in exchange for Jamal Adams, who they think is this awful guy for wanting to not play for the New York Jets anymore. Okay.
Right.
You know, like, sorry, he felt like he was a hostage. even if he didn't get paid, and even if that trade didn't necessarily work out for Seattle. Yeah, I mean, when you make a big trade like that, when you had a player that was a difference maker, no matter how you felt about him, how much of one, it's definitely up for debate. You have to actually nail those picks. And I think that with Joe Douglas, you saw at first that maybe there were some things that you really liked about him. But now you take a look back at some of the guys that they brought in. Denzel Mims, what the hell's going on with him at tackle? Mekhi Becton, he looked really good his first year. But now all of a sudden, you're sort of wondering about how long he might have in this league, if maybe this isn't going to work out for him, if injuries are potentially going to hold him back. Yeah, Zach Wilson, too. Second overall last year. I mean, I haven't been whelmed to this point.
I haven't been whelmed.
No, I mean, he had a nice finish.
Is whelmed a word?
Yeah, I think.
Oh,
I don't know. We'll make it a word.
Overwhelmed, underwhelmed. I like that.
Listen,
okay.
We're in radio, Vanessa. Right. We can just do whatever.
We just talked about apples on air.
Right. It's as long
fuzzies on food.
Yeah, as long as people have a general idea of what we're saying. I'm going to say the Jaguars have the most pressure on them.
Interesting. Why is that?
You don't know who the consensus number one is, and say you miss, say you take the wrong guy, and someone right afterwards ends up being good, and you already have a year where you're looking at Trevor Lawrence, who was last year's number one overall pick, and you're not 100% sold on him. I mean, that guy was supposed to be a sure thing prospect, and I'm sure that with Doug Peterson, things will be better than it was with Urban Meyer, but what if you have the number one overall pick in back-to-back years and you whiff on both?
Yeah, it's a great point. Jags certainly could be in that conversation. We want to know what you guys have to say. I'm at Sports Vanessa. He's at Gallant Says. Our producer is Sean Mapes, and of course you can get at us on Twitch and chat with us there, or our phone number is 713-780-3776. Which NFL team do you feel has the most pressure on them to have a successful draft? Is the NFL draft un-American? And I say that semi-sarcastically, so don't come at me on social media.
Do they respect the troops?
Stand for the flag, kneel for God.
They do now. Like we don't even see what's going on during the anthem anymore.
Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio called the NFL draft un-American. He wrote, "The draft reflects anti-American values. It restrains it restrains movement and flexibility and the inherent realities of self-determination. It forces men, not long removed from being boys, to move to places they otherwise would never choose to live, often hundreds if not thousands of miles from the places they'd prefer to start their professional lives." I wish that I would have thought of this earlier, because I need Justin Timberlake's Cry Me a River playing in the background of this. There you go, Justin. This is literally one of the most ridiculous things I've heard. And every now and then Mike Florio says something. You know, he has a law background. He's intelligent. We know
he
that.
He bakes takes.
But this is unbelievable. Calling the NFL draft un-American. These young men who are, quote unquote, not far removed from being boys are about to make millions of dollars. And yeah, they might go to a city that they don't like. They only have to play 16, 17 games for that city, and they can spend an entire offseason. Oh, and by the way, they're going to make enough money to be able to afford private jets to wherever they want to go. And then at the end of their rookie contracts, or in today's age of player men empowerment, maybe even before that, they can find a landing spot. This is stupid. It's dumb. The NFL draft is not un-American. It's about as American as it gets.
I like Florio, because he will give you a just out of nowhere take. This is an un-American thing. And I legitimately do like it. Like I think Mike's a good guy. Back at the Texans flagship, we had him on. I think he's actually a pretty good sport if you bust his balls about stuff like this. I'm gonna make a devil's advocate argument for lawyer Mike Florio, because I've been watching Better Call Saul and brushing up on my legal skills.
Oh my God.
So I get what he's saying from this perspective. You should, in America, based off of the merits of your accomplishments, be able to choose what you do as opposed to being impressed into something. And I will never compare sports to slavery like some of the real woke types will do. No, it's like a plantation. Well, I would work at that plantation then. It's one of those things where I understand the idea of a team that sucks is rewarded by getting to have the best possible player. That's, I think, where he's going with, and that is the draft. But my counterargument to his point about that and how that isn't un-American is the best part about the NFL is the level playing field that it has created for itself. Parity is at its highest in the NFL compared to any other sport. Yes, the teams that have quarterbacks have a leg up on the teams that don't have quarterbacks, but there is a saying about on any given Sunday, how many teams have gone undefeated in our lifetime? One, and they lost in the Super Bowl. How many have gone undefeated in this league's history since the beginning of the Super Bowl era? Two in the regular season, one for the entirety of the year. And, I mean, shoot, they almost gave that game away because Gary Apremian, this kicker who tried to throw a ball and it just, like, fell off his arm and looked all weird. Anyway, I get where he's trying to take this, but I think that it's good for the NFL that you have a draft. The problem is where now as they start to look at the Dolphins and the Browns for possible tanking, that's...
Sure. That's a great point.
Now that teams are openly... like wink, wink, nod, nodding at each other that, hey, we're doing this. That's where you can say, okay, well, that's kind of messed up that a team can reward itself in that manner.
But think about the language here. It forces men, quote, it forces men not too long removed from being boys to move to places they otherwise would never choose to. They're getting so much money. Each team now has a psychologist. They have somebody that talks to these young men not far removed from being boys about budgets. I mean, they're pampered in the NFL. I'm not saying it's not a hard job. There's a reason these guys, you know, are getting CTE and have a lot of injuries. I'm not saying it's not hard. I'm just saying they are taken care of. This, to me, is the most victim complexy thing. And you know what? Unfortunately, that is as American as it gets. Mike Florio, come on.
Victim complexes are pretty American.
Yeah. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I do think largely, yes, it is ridiculous. But I appreciate the take. On a Monday... Yeah.
I appreciate the Florio take.
Because I'll be honest, I hate just the pre-draft conversations because it's lame to just say, I don't know. But
right, right, right.
That's how I feel about pretty much all of this stuff. You really don't know. Every year you realize more and more, I really don't know. So I appreciate the change of pace by old Mikey Mike.
Meanwhile, Cardinals probably won't take a quarterback in the draft.
No.
We knew that, but it seems like Kyler is coming back around. I want to win a Super Bowl with the Cardinals, Kyler Murray said on Twitter. AZ is home.
Vanessa, this is the most...
How heartwarming. They always come back, don't they?
This is the most beta surrender that I can remember. This guy deleted all mention of the Cardinals from his social media. His agent comes out and puts together this list, essentially explaining why things are not going in Kyler Murray's favor. And all it takes is a press conference where Steve Kine, the general manager, and Michael Bidwell, the owner, say, no, we're not trading him. And all of a sudden, Kyler Murray is surrendering? What are you, French? This is pathetic. This is absolutely pathetic.
Especially after the scrubbing of the social media.
Yeah, stand your ground.
Yeah.
Okay, you want a new deal? They're not going to give you a new deal now. You just surrendered. This is just disappointing. And... you know, it just shows a lack of backbone. And I'm going to put this on Generation Z.
Ooh.
You know, you guys talk a big game. Oh, well, where was the leverage that Kyler Murray had? He never had any to begin with. So just an insufferable series of events by Kyler Murray. We're not done here. This will pop up again next offseason. It'll be just as insufferable because Kyler Murray, I think, has shown track record-wise that he's a little tone-deaf when it comes to trying to get his way. You know, look at that Dan Patrick interview that he did before the draft.
Bad.
Like, the guy's just weird. Nothing wrong with being weird, but this is a beta surrender.
Murray also replied with a 100 emoji to Ian Rapoport of NFL Media's tweet saying that GM Steve Keim says there's zero chance Murray will be traded.
Nothing
it's
happens.
It's like when someone does something that you don't want to do and you say, oh, yeah, you know what? I was going to do that anyway. You're totally right.
And now, Vanessa, what he's going to do, he's going to do what Russell Wilson did last offseason. He is going to, and I think I'm doing this right, he is going to gaslight people into thinking that there were never any trade rumors.
Yep.
That's what he's doing. Like, it's already starting right
now. He's going to say, that was the media. That was y'all.
I feel bad for the people in Arizona that cover this team on a regular basis that are now going to have their mentions like, oh, Kyler was never leaving.
I think there's a reason that you didn't see DeAndre Hopkins or J.J. Watt or other members from the Cardinals sticking up for him, like the guys usually do. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, who is the trashiest fan base? Paul Gallant has a take. That's
ESPN 97.5. listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are rolling along on a Monday morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is with me. Sean Mapes is with me as always. Appreciate you tuning in. There were a lot of incidents over the weekend, some involving fans, whether it was the Dodgers fans getting into an argument with the Padres fans, whether it was the Yankees fans literally throwing things at Miles Straw and the Cleveland Guardians. Fans in sports, what can we say about them? Some fan bases are more mild than others. And it led us to this question.
Yes.
Who's the trashiest fan base?
Right. And look, there's a lot of ways to define trashy.
Sure.
I would say, think of it from this perspective. You are legitimately keeping your head on a swivel if you go to a ballpark, stadium, arena featuring their fans. You are constantly on edge, not knowing if something could potentially happen to you for no reason whatsoever. You're probably not even going to wear your favorite team's gear into said stadium. You're definitely not going to chirp too much, because even friendly chirping can lead to a random Dodgers fan trying to beat the hell out of you from the back. I want to know which one has you looking all over.
I think number one for me would have it in baseball, especially, would have to be Yankees.
Yeah.
I think that to your point, the Dodgers could fall in that category as well. But like, you never feel like you're going to go to a St. Louis Cardinals game and get beat up.
Oh,
like,
yeah, because the Cardinal way. Yeah. Because the Cardinals fans are insufferable about how like
they
sanctimonious
may be insufferable,
they are.
But they're not gonna beat you or get physical with you.
Maybe
you know,
that's what
you
they
don't
want
go to a
think.
Seattle Seahawks game or a Colts game or a Packers game and think I'm going to get beat up.
That is true. That is definitely true.
Like, no risk there at all. So to me, I say Yankees.
I never feel like I'm going to get beaten up by Yankee fans. I feel like I would be berated.
Right.
And that whenever you have any sort of counter to them, that they're going to say, 27 rings, 27
but
rings.
But that's trashy.
It is. I'm just saying that I don't feel nervous. I don't feel
scared.
Okay,
so then the question is violent.
I guess that's true.
Because trashiest fan base is definitely the wife beater gold chain Yankees.
Yeah.
Violent, you could make an argument for what, Dodgers? Who would you say? What say you?
Yes, Dodgers definitely. I think the biggest combo, though, of all of it is Philadelphia. And I have had multiple experiences with fans claiming to be from Philadelphia who have made me feel a little uneasy. First off, going to Super Bowl 39, walking into the stadium. My stepdad's an Eagles fan. I'm a Patriots fan. Multiple times, the R word was dropped. Hey, what's the deal with your R word, son?
Jesus.
Not once, not twice, three times on the way into the stadium. I thought it was funny. I didn't feel in any danger. I'm half from Philadelphia, whatever. You know, like half my family's from there. But the more nerve-wracking situation was, Syracuse was playing Penn State once. We're walking around campus. One of my friends apparently was making out with somebody that had been making out with a girl before.
Okay.
This guy was wearing a Penn State jersey. He felt the need to yell, sloppy seconds, as it was taking place. My good friend Steve is just completely obliterated, had no idea what was happening, and none of us did. So we both told him to like bleep off. And there was like six or seven of us, so nothing was going to happen. But the guy walks up to us in his Penn State jersey. Classic. Like, really, yeah. We're talking a real combo here. Penn State, like crazy cult that thought Joe Paterno didn't do anything wrong, and Philadelphia fans. I mean, it's an incredible...
it's a Venn diagram there.
This is a crossbreed, right? Like, this is something that you breed to get drunk at a game and potentially assault somebody. Whips out a switchblade, and he says, yo, I'm from Philly. Nothing more.
So you had a switchblade pulled on you.
Yeah. We all laughed and just walked away because it was like six of us. But this is just a random guy from Philadelphia who's a Penn State fan, pulls out a switchblade. Yo, I'm from Philly.
You know what? Josh
Philly's number one.
Josh Innes brings up a good point on our Twitch feed, though. There's varying levels of fighting. There's drunken bro fighting that you get at tailgates, and then there's like fighting. This goes back to the levels of trashy. I say Yankees are the trashiest, but to your point, would they be the most violent? It may be Philadelphia.
I, I think, though, look, there's with Philadelphia, I feel like if you engage with them, you know what you're signing up for. Where if you decide that you're going to talk like a lot of trash to somebody from Philadelphia, like, you know where it is going because you are taking it there. I honestly feel like with Dodgers fans, like, there's such wild cards that you really do not know. And just based off of some of the headlines that you read about them.
It doesn't always depend on city, though, because, like, Chicago is a very, very, very violent city.
Mm-hmm.
But Bears fans and Cubs fans and, like, Blackhawks fans are not going to beat you up. It's not going to happen.
So we're talking about these things because we saw in the Yankees-Guardians game, Yankees fans got beer bottles and they were essentially throwing it
and at ice cream cones.
Guardians players. Ice cream cones, too. And then they were also making the meow hand signal at
the
former
not
Astros.
Manly.
Right. They're basically saying that you have lady parts to Miles Straw, who decided that he was going to perhaps take justice into his own hand. And then we just saw once again, like, wow, Dodgers fans fighting somebody. There's a beef between San Diego and Los Angeles. Who would have thought?
I'm forever and always on Team Miles Straw on this.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Miles Straw didn't go to the podium and didn't, you know, release a PR statement and say, I'm really sorry that I got in the Yankees fans' face. No, he doubled down on it. And the Guardians, it still feels weird to say Guardians, by the way.
It does.
I keep wanting to say Indians. But Cleveland's baseball Twitter account tweeted out a picture of the guys that said, quote unquote, family. So I like that they didn't back down. And as Matt Young from the Houston Chronicle said, 29 other baseball teams need to build a statue for Miles Straw. Meanwhile, the Yankees letter could be released at some point.
It
this
could.
Is something that we've heard about for a long time. When I covered the World Series here in October and Rob Manfred came into the Minute Maid vicinity, the number one thing being shouted at him had nothing to do with the World Series and nothing to do with the Astros cheating scandal. It was unseal the letter.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reaction on this. A lot of Astros fans that want to know what's in that letter.
I saw some tweets about it from noted defender of the Houston Wall, Ben DeBose.
Ben DeBose.
Who I like.
Ben, yeah, we love Ben.
Ben is very,
he's passionate,
very passionate online. Yes. So this guy named Andy Martino, who is, I guess, a guy who covers the Yankees and Mets for SNY,
yeah,
who wrote a book called Cheated. So I guess he has been putting out the spin job that makes it seem like whenever this letter is released for that shows what the Yankees did or didn't do, like, it's not going to incriminate them that much. But it's not the point. The point's never been about what is this letter going to reveal. When you are trying that hard to keep something from being released, the only assumption that you can make is that they feel like they did something wrong.
Right.
They feel guilty about something. Oh, it's going to paint us in a bad light. It's going to make us look disreputable. Well, what's more going to make you look that way is that your own players have consistently whined, and Brian Cashman, your whole organization keeps bringing up being cheated when they were supposedly doing varying degrees of sign stealing. That's the whole point. It's just the hypocrisy. It has nothing to do. What is going to be found, Vanessa? I'm sure it's not going to be that salacious.
Brian Cashman, meanwhile, and it's saying that unsealing a letter from Rob Manfred will cause significant and irreparable reputational harm.
Jesus. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you hear from a lawyer. And I got to say, I understand it. And all I'm saying, though, is that you have been hypocrites. It is about hypocrisy.
It is.
Because that is all we care about, it seems like, these days in the U.S. of A. Have you changed your mind for seemingly no reason about something that you perhaps at one point were very much pointing the finger at and saying, this is wrong? That's what you did.
Wow, Paul, you dress up one day for work and you're arguing like a lawyer.
Mm.
Our friends on Twitch can see him.
A little bit of Better Call Saul in the old veins.
Paul's adulting today, so he wants to look official.
Oh, I have to intimidate my apartment complex people.
Yeah, to let you out of your... Are you on a lease?
Yeah, I have a long list of, like, all the things that they haven't taken care of. It's like 27 points.
Paul's going to walk in there and say, do you know who I am?
No, I'm not. That is the last straw, though.
But it's
I've
it's
never
there.
Done that. I've never
it's
done
there,
that.
It's there, though.
I've never done that.
If you don't let me out of my lease, I'll rip
Check
you
that.
On ESPN Houston.
I did do it once because I was like, screw it. I'm not going to get into this bar. So I was just like, do you know who I am? And they're like, no. And I was like, damn it.
Oh, so you did try.
And then I went home and cried. Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of crying, Ben Simmons still not playing, and one of my favorite players ever rips him a new one. That's next.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, I'm going to sound like a baby boomer for a minute, but we're at the point in professional sports to where players are just deciding not to play for either load management or because they have a little back pain. Ben Simmons, last minute, deciding he's not going to play, sitting on the bench, sticking out like a sore thumb. And Reggie Miller was not having it. TNT's Reggie Miller, of course, Indiana Pacers legend, tweeted, "Come on, man, out for game four when it was rumored you were going to make your debut. This dude has zero competitive fire. As small a chance as the Nets have to come back in the series, you still have KD and Kyrie. All you need is to win one game and take it from there. Hashtag man up." I love it. I'm team Reggie Miller all the time anyway, but especially on this.
This biggest problem for Ben Simmons in that specific moment, you're trying to call attention to yourself. I saw some post, I forget what day it was, I think it was on Friday, where I think GQ said, like, Ben Simmons is redefining style on the bench and showing all of the outfits that he was wearing, although they call them fits now. Look at his fit. He looks great. It's like, no, he still looks like a player who is using mental health as a shield for not playing.
Right, and not getting criticized.
Right, yeah. And getting paid along the way, too, which is, I think, the most ridiculous part of all. And I know there's been a lot made of comments Kyrie Irving made in the series, because the Celtics are now up 3-0 and could sweep the Brooklyn Nets tonight, where Kyrie essentially said, in a nutshell, and I do think a lot has been made of this quote, maybe too much has been made of it, but he's like, well, we haven't been together that much. Well, yeah, because Kyrie, you didn't play much of this year.
Right.
Perhaps a little bit of a different situation because it did seem like Kyrie was just being a rebel for the sake of being a rebel, but also because he didn't believe with the vaccine stuff. And I know there's a lot of varying opinions and all that. I don't want to dive into that. All I'm saying is there's been a lot of guys just not playing. James Harden, too. And I don't know how the NBA fixes that, but that is something that they definitely need to change.
There's zero accountability. There's zero integrity. And Reggie Miller it comes across as get off my lawn, but it's accurate. When you look back at the old days of the NBA, old days, I say, being 25, 30 years ago, do you think Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, if you want to go back further, whatever, do you think these guys are not going to play because they have quote-unquote back pain? Or because, and listen, I am very much mental health advocate. Do what you need to do. But you have to remember this guy wasn't playing because he had mental health issues.
I think all of those players were facing far worse. And I know that social media didn't exist at the time, but I think all of those players, in particular Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, were facing a lot worse as far as vile things being thrown their way.
And they sacked up and played.
People are criticizing Ben Simmons for being bad at basketball. I mean, he's good at other elements of his life. And also, he's playing in Philadelphia, too, so there's that whole dynamic. We do have a call, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Jefe, Jeff, what's going on?
How are you doing?
Doing well, guy.
Good. I love this Ben Simmons story, but I wanted to comment. You were going back and forth about the people in New York, in the bleachers, in the Bronx, acting up, that's a given.
It's a given.
So your argument is like that Yankees fans are trashy because you already know that that's going to happen?
No, there is no argument. If you don't expect stuff to happen in the bleachers in New York, you're deluding yourself.
So you're basically, if you're going
delusional.
Okay. Should they give them those fans, Jeff, in the stands and the bleachers in New York, instead of giving them beer cans, should they all be given like little like foam cups so that if they throw it onto the field, it won't hit anybody?
Give them foam cups. Actually, I thought they discontinued the beer cans a couple of years back.
Yeah, I did too.
Regardless of if you're throwing something on the field, you're an idiot.
I agree.
Like,
but,
I don't care if it's gum or an ice cream cone. Like, just be an adult.
But to Jeff's point, I mean, that might be the smartest measure that we could do here is in the bleachers. Maybe you should not be able to buy a can of alcohol. You have to buy a cup, or they pour it into a cup for you like you're a little child.
And once again, in America, we cater to the most immature. But, Jeff, to your point, yes, you do expect things when you were playing the Yankees.
Good stuff, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff, for calling, and we appreciate you and appreciate you listening. Let's go to our garbage time segment.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I'm going to start off with a story about a statue.
Oh, okay.
A statue that has not been taken down yet. But damn it, it should be.
Lots of statues being taken down within the last year here in the U.S. of A.
So I'm retweeting this at Gallant Says, at Sports Vanessa, at ESPN 97.5. Oklahoma unveiled a statue of Baker Mayfield.
Oh.
It does not look like Baker Mayfield.
No, it doesn't.
It's a man running with a football, holding out his left arm to stiff arm somebody. I don't know if this is like the cops that, you know, tracked him down that one time in Oklahoma. Not to dump on Baker Mayfield, but it looks nothing like him. It in fact looks more, you hear Frank from Always Sunny in Philadelphia coming in here. It looks much more like Dennis from Always Sunny in Philadelphia than it does Baker Mayfield, because he's wearing some sort of a headband. But this is one of the worst statues I've ever seen, and this just goes to my theory that you should not build statues of anybody, because one, we're going to have to take these down eventually, because, you know, someone
maybe canceled.
Right. Eventually, Baker Mayfield is going to be canceled like 30 years from now. Like some crazy Ohio State fan is going to pull out a lawsuit because of the time that Baker Mayfield planted the flag at halftime. He's going to say like, yeah, my goldfish died when he did that. So because I flushed him down the toilet, I was so angry. In that moment of trauma, he needs to be canceled for that because it hurt my feelings. Like, this statue will be taken down, but I feel like it should be taken down now anyway, because that does not look like Baker Mayfield. It looks awful. And if you are a Sooner, who the hell? You have money. Who are you paying to do this statue?
Here's the incredible thing about the statue. The features don't even match Baker. Like, the nose is completely different. The statue has a sharp nose and a ginormous forehead, which Baker Mayfield really doesn't. There's no facial hair.
No.
The way that his statue's cheekbones are, I mean, this looks nothing like Baker Mayfield.
He has a big headband on, supposedly, so that's part of it. But the funny thing is, the picture that I just retweeted, Baker Mayfield's looking at it, and he's got this look of like,
yeah, he looks uncomfortable. Meanwhile, Chicago Bears receiver Byron Pringle, baby, what are you doing? He's arrested in Florida on Saturday. He had a suspended license.
Oh, no.
He was doing donuts in a parking lot with his child in the car.
Well, that's fun. That's a fun, you
day
know,
out with dad.
Child bonding experience. You know,
yeah, my dad never did something cool like that.
Yeah.
Your dad never put your life in danger. Florida Highway Patrol officers say Pringle became verbally confrontational after he was stopped while driving an orange Dodge Challenger on Saturday night.
That's the problem.
North of Tampa. It was about 6 p.m. He was burning rubber and doing donuts on a public road.
No offense. If you drive a Dodge Challenger or a Ford Mustang, you generally just, I think most people assume you're a douche. Like, no offense. And when you're driving around doing donuts in a parking lot, it's going to be a little bit easier to stand out from the rest of the crowd while doing these donuts if you're driving an orange Dodge Challenger. But if you're driving a different color car, he might have been fine.
Meanwhile, the wussification of America continues.
Uh-oh.
As a family in Boston. Here's the headline. Family terrorized by golf balls wins nearly $5 million from the neighboring country club.
Wait a second. How?
This happened in Massachusetts. A family with three daughters sued Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's the county I grew up in.
For trespass over the continual bombardment of golf balls. The country club was there before the family moved in. Yet they move in and they are mad that the golf balls continue to come in their yard, so they sue.
I saw a viral video the other day of a guy getting mad at people who, I guess, hit a ball up into the person's backyard. And one of the people that was golfing with this group said, "You live on a golf course, man. You should expect this if you live on a golf course, if you buy a house on a golf course. I'm surprised that they were able to win a $5 million lawsuit from it. I mean,
and this is the county you grew up in.
Kingston, if I'm not mistaken, is in Plymouth County.
Do some research and find out more about this, because this story fascinated me.
Yeah, I'm telling you, those people knew what they were signing up for if they've got a house on a golf course, 100%.
Meanwhile, according to Fox 26, a fugitive with 31 felony warrants throughout Texas arrested in Harris County. How do you have that many?
I don't know, but like, he was playing real-life Grand Theft Auto. I guess it was all burglars, but all burglarizing. He was like the Hobbit. Good job.
God.
But eventually caught up. So good job by the Northwest Harris County Police Department.
All right. That is all we have for Vanessa and Glenn. It's been a Monday. You look nice, Paul.
Thank you. You look nice, too.
Well, thanks, but I kind of have sweatpants on. You're wearing...
You can pull off the sweatpants look.
People
are like, wow, they have such low standards for me. They're like, wow, Paul, you look nice today. That's what I'm hearing.
But you're going to try to break off a lease.
Yeah.
You have some adult things that you're going to do.
I got to go get a title thing. Yeah. Fun times.
That's been another episode of Vanessa and Glenn. Up next, we have Joel Blank. We have Jeremy Branham. And you are going to hear the Killer Bees. Thanks for listening, guys.
Peace.
When the whistle goes, real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5.